Good evening. Welcome to the March 18th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. Thank you for attending. We'll start with introductions. Can we start on the right?
Sure. Adrian Hampton, Central Kitsap.
Good evening. Richard Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
David Vliet, North Kitsap.
Tammy Bowen, North Kitsap.
Jonathan Tudan, South Kitsap.
This is a hybrid meeting. Following procedures will be in effect today.
We have Commissioner Murphy online. Sorry.
Okay. Aaron? Hello, Aaron. Aaron Murphy.
Commissioner Murphy, do you want to introduce yourself, please?
Thanks. Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
This is a hybrid meeting. Please silence all electronic devices during the meeting. If attending in person, please refrain from conversations with other attendees or staff during the meeting. If you wish to provide general comments during the public comment period or testify in a public hearing, there are four methods available. First, for those who are attending in person, please sign up in the sheet in the back of the room. Second, for virtual attendees, please raise your hand at the appropriate time using the raise hand button at the bottom of the Zoom window. Your name will be called. Your microphone will be unmuted. Third, call-in attendees can signal by pressing star 9 on your keyboard. Your last four digits of your phone number will be called, and you will be connected. You may have to dial star 6 to unmute your phone. Fourth, written comments. And testimony can be submitted to staff or emailed to cjewel@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. the day prior to the meeting. Please include the date of the meeting the comments are meant for, your name, the agenda item, and the subject that you're addressing. Submitted comments will then be entered into the record at the appropriate time. For all speakers, please state your name and general area in which you live. Comments are normally limited to about 2 minutes, but can be adjusted by the chair. Next is the adoption of the agenda.
I move we adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor? Agenda is accepted. Next is adoption of the minutes, and the minutes that we'll be working on are for the March 4th meeting, 2025.
I move we adopt the amendments as presented by staff for the March 4, 2025 meeting.
Second.
Any discussion? Changes, modifications? No discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Minutes are adopted. This opens the beginning in the general comment period. Do we have any comments from the virtual audience?
Yes, we have Mr. Palmer online.
Mr. Palmer.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My comment is really a couple of questions for Colin when he introduces his subject on housing targets. Number one question is I'd like him to address the issue of who can afford apartments or houses based on median income at the very least. Second, I would like him to address the long-term investment of wealth building by people being able to own a single-family house or condominium rather than just renting for the next 15 to 20 years. hopefully those are issues that are addressed as part of housing targets. And I guess there's a third, and that is to tell us why expedited permitting will allow you to meet the targets when, in fact, the evidence shows that the expedited permitting really cannot be implemented in Kitsap County.
Thank you. Any other comments from outside? Any comments from the floor? Hearing none, we will close the first general public hearing comments. That brings us to the housing targets brief for tonight.
Good afternoon, Planning Commission, or evening, I guess. Colin Poff, I'm the Long Range Planning Supervisor. We added this topic to the agenda because it's an important one of housing and something we talked about a lot during the comp plan update. So this is meant to just kind of fill in our time today. It's more of an educational topic, continue the discussion on this. There's really no action needed from the Planning Commission at this time because it's not tied to a project that we're doing, but very important nonetheless. And I think many of you have heard about this as we did our comp plan update, but there are some new members on the Planning Commission as well. So I wanted to give it some time. And I think it also ties nicely into a little bit about how local planning also interacts with requirements at the state level and other regional plans as well. So that's the purpose for this topic today. So there was new housing legislation prior to our comp plan at the state level. This is House Bill 1220. We were one of the first jurisdictions, being a 2024 update county, to respond to this. But it did change a lot about some of the drivers behind our comp planning and some of the ways that we need to go about doing things. The Growth Management Act before had language that said counties and cities should encourage affordable housing. This language was a change in that we actually need to accommodate and provide for housing at various income levels. What this means is showing your work, basically, for providing housing for different economic segments of the population, characterized as moderate, low, very low, and extremely low income, as well as permanent supportive housing and emergency housing. Part of this bill is about also providing for moderate density options in our urban growth areas. So expanding different housing types, or at least allowance of different housing types in our urban growth areas. And I have a slide about how in our comp plan we took some provisions to do that. And then also providing some documentation of adequate provisions that we've taken for housing for existing projected needs for all economic segments. So we've documented that as part of our comp plan as well. So I think you hear this term maybe frequently, is growth targets. So I have a slide here about what are growth targets. We have growth targets before for population and employment, and also for now for housing as well. So that's new to the county. And those are targets through a 20-year planning period. So the comp plan is Kitsap 2044. It's a 20-year planning horizon. These housing targets, and this might be familiar to some on the Planning Commission, were determined prior to the comp plan. They are determined by what's called the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council, KRCC, and then those inform our local plans, our comprehensive plan. Generally speaking, among other things, one of the goals of the comp plan is to try to balance to these targets. So we have different land use plans, different land use maps that we analyze, but we're looking at how they balance with population, housing, and employment needs. Furthermore, housing targets are broken down by jurisdiction and by, as I mentioned, income levels as well. So planning has become, in many ways, there's a math component or a math equation component to it. And so that's part of this. And then in population, we have always done this with our comp plans. Jurisdictions are allocated a certain amount of population, and we have to demonstrate that we have adequate capacity for that population. Normally, cities can go over that number, but historically, counties don't really go over that number. They try to balance around that population and also are heavily discouraged from expanding urban growth areas to accommodate that within existing urban areas. So this is where it ties in a little bit to local planning to the state and regional level. So I thought that was important to include. The Growth Management Act has 15 goals. Some of those include affordable housing, also reducing sprawl, protecting the environment, and protecting property rights, to name a few. So those are the things that are balanced at the growth at the state level, meeting the goals of the Growth Management Act. At the state level, they provide population forecasts. Office of Financial Management has financial forecasts, population forecasts, low, medium, and high. Generally, we look at kind of the medium level. And so Vision 2050 is a Puget Sound Regional Council document. Puget Sound Regional Council is a regional planning agency for Snohomish, King, Pierce, and Kitsap County. And their document's Vision 2050, and they look at a regional growth strategy. If you read their plan, it says, well, according to these population forecasts, we're looking at, in the Puget Sound region, 1.6 million additional people between 2020 and 2050. And here's how the regional growth strategy should look between different geographies. You know, we want a lot of growth in capacity, high capacity transit areas in regional centers like Silverdale, we talked about, and generally limited in our rural areas. And then, like I said, at the countywide planning policies level, that's Kitsap, KRCC, Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council. And they adopt growth targets by jurisdiction. So then they look and they say, this is how much growth we're looking at for the cities, for the unincorporated urban areas of Kingston and Central Kitsap and Port Orchard UGA and our rural areas. And that's adopted, and then we go into our comp planning. But we just need to show consistency between all these levels. So that's important to understand. So getting into the housing target piece of it, this is a big table, but generally shows one thing that's relevant to for Planning Commission to know is that we did a lot of work throughout the comp plan process between our different alternatives, between our where we landed with our preferred alternative capacity, and this generally shows a shortage of around 1,200 units between our preferred alternative and the housing targets, and the majority of that, or the vast majority of that, is in the 50% or under income level. And there was a question earlier about affordability. I'll say that the annual median income, I actually don't know what the exact number is. I think in Kitsap County, the household annual median income is around $100,000. Housing is considered affordable if it's 30% of income, of household income, is what is considered affordable for purposes of planning. So one question came up also, how do we monitor progress towards these goals? What is the county's role in that? And I have a couple of slides on that later to get a little bit into that question. There was also a question a couple weeks ago about an appeal. So there is an appeal of our comp plan, with housing being one of those issues. So this just demonstrates that it's showing that we're a bit short on our housing target. As you know, the GMA requirement is to show adequate capacity for this much housing. We're a bit short, so that is the issue. If an appeal goes to the Growth Management Hearings Board, that's who hears appeals, decisions are made on that within 180 days. And there would be a finding of either compliance or non-compliance. But even so, the plan is still valid in that time. So we're still moving forward with the comp plan. I won't say much about employment, but same thing. We have employment targets, which were pretty balanced too throughout our different UGAs. And then population, where did that one go? I guess I skipped this one. So population, as you can see, we're actually over in population, and there's some reasons to why that is, which I could get into, but the red numbers are showing UGAs where we're over in population. That is an example of trying to balance two different targets, to population targets, to housing targets, to employment targets, and how challenging that is. So we have a housing element in our comp plan, which includes goals, policies, and strategies. This is something that we intend to monitor and implement over the coming years. Some existing conditions in that plan. As of 2022, approximately 118,000 housing units in the county. Approximately 74% of these units are detached housing, and approximately 2.23 average household size. Some examples of goals or policies: ensure sufficient housing stock is available, affordable and accessible at different income levels and in a variety of housing types. Encourage multifamily, townhomes, cottage housing, and accessory dwelling units. Promote infill housing in urban growth areas and preserve existing affordable housing stock. Mitigate displacement risk and ensure equitable treatment and outcomes. What is the county's role in this? The county doesn't necessarily build housing. We rely on the market. We try to create the conditions in which these targets can be achieved. At the lower income levels, 50% under, for example, some the market may not be able to provide that, and there is a role for the county in that kind of housing. But generally, we're trying to create an environment where we would change development trends a bit to move towards these goals and these targets. We do need to monitor our progress, and we do that on an annual basis. There's annual reporting requirements that would include reporting on building permits, especially multifamily building permits. Reporting potentially on indicators such as staffing levels, ADUs and other housing types being processed, and permitting timelines. There's a question about permitting. There is no expedited permitting program at this time in Kitsap County, but as has, I think, been presented before, we're implementing a permit review efficiency program across our entire division, and that is to respond to other legislation about permitting timelines specifically. House Bill 5290 or Senate Bill 5290 with requirements about permit timelines. So we do have a program that's underway being implemented kind of in its early stages for that. There's also a five-year update. So comp plans are done every 10 years. So at 5 years, we'll have a look back. We need to do some reporting at that time. Well, hopefully we'll have good monitoring, good indicators that we've developed as well, and potentially look at how close, if our trends are following our goals, and if not, what measures potentially need to be taken. Last slide here is just a kind of a reminder of other things that we did in our comp plan related to housing. Like we talked about a couple weeks ago, we're focusing on centers, Silverdale Regional Center, one of those, Kingston, McWilliams, 303. But we've also increased heights and densities throughout our urban zones, or our residential urban zones and commercial in our UGAs. And other measures such as reducing parking requirements and making things like attached housing easier by making zero lot line housing easier in different zones, those kind of things, those measures were taken during the comp plan and actually go effective in a couple of weeks. So that's the presentation. I know it's kind of a heavy topic, but I think it's important because it just shows a lot of important work that we did over the last couple of years, but just what we're looking forward to in housing in general, and also touches on just kind of some of the ways that this planning is done. And so that's the presentation on housing. I'll answer any questions that I can.
Mm-hmm.
when you're doing your monitoring, we're having a lot of single-family building activity right now in, around Silverdale, up in north of Wagga, and then also the Apex pit. Is that single-family housing going to count against us, or is that already?
Well, it depends on the project whether or not it was already accounted for as a pipeline project. Right. When we do our land capacity analysis, we include pipeline projects. So it depends where it was at in terms of if it was already counted or not. Some of that may not have been counted. I wouldn't say it counts against us, no. I mean, we have an overall housing target need, a housing need, an overall target. But just generally, when you look at the main issue that the county is facing is that we started the comp plan with a demonstrated lack of other housing types of multifamily. And so that's the gap that mostly needs to be addressed.
Second question, last one is, are we getting our community development block grant monies, or have they been blocked?
I don't have an answer on that, but that's an important question.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Other questions? Mm-hmm. I got a couple. Thanks for that briefing, Colin. So with regards to like the population target capacity, it's strange to me, and thanks for clarifying earlier, but when I see negatives in red, yeah, it makes it look like we're not doing enough, but it sounds like we've overdone or we've met or exceeded in those numbers. Is that correct?
Yeah, I see that the red can look a little bit different, but yeah, that means that we're exceeded.
Yeah,
if it's red, we're over. So 6,000 in red.
Okay. I just want to make sure I wasn't missing something there. And then something that's always been important to me, so on the housing element, you say preserve existing affordable housing. Like, what are some of the ways that the county does that through the code?
Some of that might be done through Housing and Human Services, through the code, I would have to look into that for you more. I mean, I know that just in general, encouraging a variety of housing types is one thing to try to avoid displacement effects, understanding where those effects are potentially most prevalent, and knowing those areas that have more medium and low income households or have the potential for displacement is important, monitoring those kind of things, and we intend to do that. As far as code specifically, I don't have an example for you, but I can look into that question more.
Okay. I got a couple more, and because it just always kind of pains me when I see a perfectly good house torn down. I know it makes way for other housing, but you've basically gotten rid of the affordable house. I mean, in my mind, so I don't know how we do that with property rights, but it's always kind of a difficult one. And then just living near Kingston, trying to figure out better. So I know the height limits and stuff in Kingston are lesser than maybe certain areas, but it concerns me a little bit that Kingston's kind of considered a center. I know it had to go way back. I mean, this has been happening for a while, but it just seems like we're relying on a road going in and out one way, and considering a ferry as kind of being an additional arterial is, I get it a little bit, but it just seems, I hope we really be cautious with regards to what we do to Kingston. To make sure, because it wouldn't take long for there to be some serious traffic issues, especially in the summer where there already is, like, serious traffic issues for several months at a time when everybody's trying to go out to the Olympic Peninsula. So that was just a comment.
Okay. Anything. Thank you.
We have Commissioner Murphy online.
Commissioner Murphy?
Thanks for the presentation. Can you give, it's nice to hear we're working toward this, right? But at some level, it's a little bit soft and fluffy. Sounds good from the podium. Can we give real-world examples? I've seen a presentation from probably one of our biggest, maybe top five developers in Kitsap County that says that the cost of doing business with the county is $136,000 per front door. What are you doing to create less expense in getting to yes to get you the housing you need, and what happens if we don't meet that?
Yeah, the cost of regulation, the cost of permitting is one aspect, certainly among many, but it is a significant one. In the comp plan, we were focused on our updating our development regulations more specifically in terms of bulk regulations, removing redundancy and conflicting or confusing parts of code. Those things were more part of the comp plan. I know that we've been working toward the permit review efficiency program as well, should address some of those concerns. There are other things that can, for example, like we'll speak to today with accessory dwelling units, talking about pre-approved plans and other things to incentivize that type of housing. But it's a fair point, and I can try to look for some more examples and bring them back to another meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you. Appreciate your time. Me again. Okay, so moving on to our next topic today is administrative code edits, and this is something that I just briefly talked about a couple of weeks ago. This is a work program that DCD tries to do annually. The last time that we did it was in 2022. And so this will follow a very similar process to that. During the comp plan update, there were a lot of code changes wrapped into that, so that hasn't been done in a couple of years. But this will be like that 2022 process. And today, I'd like to talk a little bit about the objectives of doing this kind of update. And also, there are about 12 or 13 of them, so I think there's time to touch on each of them. And we did provide a table that summarizes what those topics are or could be. And there's probably time to have some discussion on that, but I'd also like to talk about next steps and when we could have a work study and potentially a hearing on this topic as well. But this is an opportunity to kind of explain more about what we're doing and the types of amendments that the county rolls into an update like this. Okay. So this could touch on a variety of topics, given that this is administrative, or for lack of a better term, like housekeeping type updates. These are areas in code that we've seen that could use clarity or need an update. So it's not necessarily one topic, like this is parking. This could touch on different areas of code. So for this, we have some proposed changes that relate to Title 12, stormwater drainage, Title 16, which is our subdivision and development chapter, Title 17 zoning, and Title 21 land use and development procedures. Just a couple of points about annual code edits. Like I said, this is what I would consider good practice in terms of keeping the code, cleaning up the code and looking for areas of improvement. So a few things about that. These edits, generally speaking, are intended to move a bit more quickly through the adoption process than other types of code edit projects, just given the nature of the edits. I would also say that code is something that always needs improving, and DCD should be doing this on an annual basis. So we do have a system for kind of tracking staff-identified needs, director's interpretation of code or other code suggestions from external code suggestions. We track that and we try to move those forward if it's appropriate. So with that, what we could say is more substantive edits may fall off the list and be addressed with other process. So with the idea that these move a little bit more quickly, some are a little bit more minor than others, but if it's something that creates a lot of confusion or seem more substantive, perhaps we address it, or perhaps it moves on to a different process and just isn't for this edit, if that makes sense. Some project objectives are to eliminate or reduce conflicting or redundant provisions of code, add clarity to existing sections of code, address consistency with state law, include code that may have been inadvertently missed in a previous update, or improve code predictability or implementation for applicants and staff. So just some examples of what this type of update looks to accomplish. And again, we intend to track and adopt changes on an annual basis. So we have a form where people can submit code ideas, also where internal staff or different divisions can find issues with code and let us know so that we can track and bring that up. Let me give some examples just to show a little bit about what, and these are examples from this, what I'm about to show, of what an admin code update might include. So it's we are supposed to be codifying directors' interpretations. Directors' interpretations are things that we already do in practice that aren't necessarily in code. So for example, we have a small update to the definition of a school. That's in a director's interpretation, so that's one of the edits you'll see. We have a parking requirement that was clarified, a parking requirement that was part of House Bill 6150 that is already preemptively the requirement, but it's not reflected in code. So what is in our code is a bit different than what we're already required to do under the state law. Or we have redundant definitions in different chapters, and it's a good idea to remove the redundancy to avoid conflicts. So those are some examples. As far as next steps, and this, I'd like to discuss this with the Planning Commission as well. We're in March, and this would be Planning Commission briefing, and we're also working on completing a draft ordinance. We don't have it quite ready yet, but we would like to have that ready by the time we had a hearing on this topic. April would be tentatively the date for a Planning Commission hearing, followed by deliberations and findings of fact. And then May and June would be the process with the board. So board work study, hearing, and adoption. This slide is the exact same thing, but in a table. Sorry about that, but that's essentially what we're looking to accomplish here. So are there any, I'll stop there before I get into some of these code items. Are there any questions so far?
Just for clarity, and thank you so much for your presentation so far, will you be showing us the kind of before the recommendation and then what it looks like after? Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean?
Yes. Some of these I'm just summarizing, but in the table that we provided, you'll see underline and strikeout language. Mm-hmm. That's the way that we show the existing code that's stricken out and the proposed code that's underlined.
Okay.
And I think we have that for most items at this point. Certainly by the time we had a work study, we'd have all of it in that proposed in that format.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. And then, sorry, quick follow-up. So for the examples you gave of code changes, those mm-hmm. were most appreciated. Can you speak to changes that were made in the past that just like improved process overall or anything that you can think of off the top of your head?
The top of my head. I guess it's hard to think of the best examples. I know in 2022, for example, there was practice that when someone applied for a critical area variance, that they should pursue a zoning variance prior to looking for a critical area variance. So that was the best practice. So we added that in code so people know that they should look at, is a zoning variance more appropriate before I apply for this wetland reduction? That's one. But we also look, sometimes it's just, there's a reference in code that's referencing the wrong code and we just need to fix that, or it says the 2014 when it should say the 2018 and we need to fix that. Things like that mm-hmm. are also part of this.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Colin, are you going to give a chance to get this out to home builders and everything before April 15th, Home Builders Association and other
interested? We would do our general notification, so that would include reaching out to our gov delivery list, SEPA notification, public hearing notification, those kind of things.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Over the last 30 years, we've seen a growth in the codes. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that we can monitor and say, this is how many we added, this is how many reduced? Is there a goal or a thought process to what regulations we can get rid of?
I think going forward, we're tracking better, and so we'll definitely have a better idea of what we've been doing through the years, just based on how we're tracking it. Those kind of things are something that we could consider in future years of code that is not working well, code that maybe is not just conflicting, but maybe getting in the way of the type of development that we want to see or is unnecessary. That's not necessarily part of this update, because we're looking just more for clarity and less substantive changes. I think those could be more substantive, but it's definitely something that we could consider in the future.
I was just thinking,
the
code was about this thick when they developed the mall in Silverdale and the whole Silverdale development. Mm-hmm. And we're about now to add tremendously more requirements into that Silverdale thing. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody that's looking at what can we reduce in the way of regulations when we're going into Silverdale?
We track, as potentially future code updates, ideas like that, things that can be improved. With Silverdale specifically, when we look at updating our design standards, we're looking at making them hopefully easier to use, more clear and objective, and looking at our code to identify at least like some confusion in the permitting process or things that aren't making sense and potentially address those during the subarea plan update. So there are maybe some examples there. Yeah.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
All right. So I think we have about 12 or 13. I don't have a lot of time. And again, we can dive into these a little more in the future, although I can answer some questions now. But I wanted to just kind of illustrate what some of those potential changes are. The first two are a director's interpretation. This is in development engineering's wheelhouse more, but this is with our Title 12 stormwater drainage director's interpretation. And the interpretation says that essentially this part of code is a list of projects that require a site development activity permit. That's what this section of code is referencing. And the interpretation is stating that residential projects that are subject to stormwater requirement, minimum requirements 1 through 5, and I could try to explain that more. There's some projects 1 through 5 or some are 1 through 9 depending on the size of the project and the triggers it has for stormwater. But residential projects that are subject to 1 through 5 and have work within a critical area buffer don't require a site development activity permit, but they do require engineered drainage. And so I can speak more to that at the next meeting, but that's these first two related to that director's interpretation. This is for clarity in Title 16, our land division. As many of you know, we adopted a tree canopy ordinance in 2024. This is a new section of code, 17.495, the tree canopy. And we feel that it would be more clear for both reviewers and for applicants if that was referenced in our subdivision code. So when there's a section that talks about urban standards for subdivisions, talks about sidewalks, things like landscaping, it could just cross-reference the tree canopy code. If applicable, this is the tree canopy code. So that would be, it could be there. We also suggest that it could be in the submittal requirements as well, because you submit a landscaping plan with a plat. That landscaping plan should show the tree canopy requirements as well, again, if they apply to your project. Definitions. I think these are shown in underlined strikeout in the table that we gave you. But one is the definition of school. Adding outdoor school is included in the definition of school. And removing monastery schools because it's redundant of other types of schools that are already in the definition. So that would be the suggestion there for that amendment. This was definition of guest house. This one is likely to be deferred to another time. Current planning and the permitting division is looking at this one a little bit more closely. Essentially, there's sometimes clarity needed in what is a guest house and what is an accessory dwelling unit. You know, do they have a range and a bathroom, those kind of things, or a stove, those kind of things. So, but that's likely not going to be part of this update, so that is misleading to have on this slide. definition of parking compact. This is a situation where our parking code and the definition of compact parking have different dimensions. Parking code says 18 feet. The definition says 16 feet, or sorry, other way around. The parking code says 16. The definition says 18. It should be 16, so making consistency there. Allowed uses, outdoor storage was dropped during the use table update. I think that was 2021. This is use 549, so we've encountered some issues with that. And this is there's a director's interpretation as well as to here's what outdoor storage should say and should be allowed in these zones or a CUP in these zones. And I think that's attached to the table as well, what that addition would look like in our use table. Drinking establishments in Kingston in the UVC zone. This was a significant amount of conversation during the comp plan with the Kingston community about this, and there was this was supposed to move forward during the comp plan, but during everything that else that was going on with other code updates was dropped from the essentially missed with the comp plan update, and so this was a request from our leadership, from our board to move forward with this update as we had already discussed. There's state legislation about requiring public hearings for certain types of industrial uses. So we identified these industrial uses as being the intent of that state legislation, heavy manufacturing, recycling centers, and transshipment facilities. So in situations where those are an outright permitted use, should be a CUP because of that requirement, the public hearing requirement for these heavy industrial, and I think it makes sense given the types of uses. We recently made changes to our performance-based development code as part of the comp plan, and this is just another one of those examples where there was many changes made, and it looks like a conflict was created in that update where you have a one garage setback listed that's conflicting with the garage setback below it. Here it says 0-foot setback for garages on an alley. Below it says 10-foot setback for garages on an alley. So a clear conflict that should be addressed. And the standard was 10 feet. It's 20 feet in our normal code. It'd be 10 feet in our performance-based development code. Parking, this is a probably a more substantive change, but is in response to very clear state legislation. So we made a variety of parking changes in our comprehensive plan update. One of those was allowing one garage space to count towards parking requirements. If you look at Senate Bill 6015, it states that cities and counties must allow either unenclosed or enclosed parking spaces to count towards minimum parking requirements. So we interpret that as that would apply to parking that's within garages as well. So I believe that this would be a larger change, but it is in response to that bill, and it's administrative because that preempts the code already. So if someone were to come an application today, the state law would preempt what our code says currently. Landscaping, this is just moving something where we see in our density dimension and design standards some language about modifying landscaping standards. This seems more appropriate to be in the landscaping chapter, which is already referenced there, rather than having it in our dimension chapter, and then you have to go to our landscaping chapter. So the suggestion is that it's moved, but not changed. This is just, we referenced the commercial zone as CO, and we would, the correct terminology is just C, the correct abbreviation is C. So that's in a few different tables in the sign code, and that would be definitely just a cleanup edit. And lastly, definitions. During the comp plan, when we made some changes to Title 16, we moved definitions that were in Title 21, which is our process title, procedure title, into the subdivision chapter. Things like the definition of subdivision was moved to Title 16, and there's a handful of them. So now we actually have those definitions existing both in Title 16 and Title 21. So the suggestion is to remove them from Title 21 to create future conflicts. I think in the future we may need to do this with other titles as well, but for now the conflict's really just with land division. Okay, and that's it. So there are 14, actually, in total. Heather and I are working on this project along with Scott Diener, so you can reach out to us with any questions. Again, we're hoping to tentatively schedule a hearing for April 15th, barring any need to move that date. But if we're able to do that, we would need to do noticing fairly quickly for that. And we would suggest that we would have a work study prior to that hearing so that we could look at these edits again and hold the hearing. And, of course, deliberations and findings would be on another date. So that's my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I had a clarifying question on Title 17 zoning. Okay, so the item 9, industrial uses requiring a public hearing. I guess I would need to go read it myself to see what else is there. But for recycling centers, would that also include like solid and hazardous like waste facilities, since they're often together? Or do you see, like, I'm thinking of like a transfer station, so it wouldn't be just a recycling center?
I would have to look. I just want to look at the definition of that to make sure. But
I can
definitely
answer
that.
And then would, so with transshipment facilities, including docks, marine rail, I'm also barge facilities, would like aviation be included in there? I'm thinking about like the port and other areas.
I don't think that airport is a separate use from that. But again, I'll verify if there's anything I'm missing there, but no, that's a separate type of use.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Just a quick clarification. With all these people that are now putting electric cars in their garages, we need new charging stations for all those. Are we keeping up with the subdivisions getting enough power to the neighborhoods such that when everybody starts charging their cars at night, we can handle it?
Well, I do know that there, as you know, there was the electric vehicle code from 2021 or 2022. But we also are going to start sitting on a regional committee that is talking specifically about the rollout of more electric cars and electric infrastructure. And I think that was with some of our policy folks before on the fourth floor. And long-range planning is going to be part of those conversations going forward, so that we can understand some of the issues with that. Yeah. So we are tracking it. If that's the question.
Mm-hmm. Other comments, Aaron? Anything? Aaron's gone. No. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. One more question. Mm-hmm. Casually, I'm curious. How do you all what guides your decision-making process? So I understand that there are probably like day-to-day activities that you run into and you're like, oh, that might not be right, or maybe we'll add that to a list. I'm just curious, like, what helps guide your decision-making, if there's like a internal criteria, or how do you check for your own kind of bias and interpretations? Do you see what I mean? How do you all work together as a team to kind of come to consensus around these things? Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of that process.
Yeah, there's a few ways. One, just generally with bigger topics, we adopt our docket every year. So those are things that we, DCD is aware of, but also sometimes our board directs that these are things that we will be on our work plan, you know, and so that we can outline that and so the public knows and can understand what we're taking on as far as, and so code updates can be part of that docket. We also, again, track updates. So we encourage people that are implementing the code that the long-range planners are working on to track when conflicts are created, and then we follow through with them, and we want to discuss that more or discuss that with other divisions that are finding these issues. We also have sometimes problems arise during code review, and so we have the director's interpretation process to fall back on if needed, or when there's something that's not clear in code or not included in code. And generally we try to work as much across divisions as we can without trying to silo ourselves just in long-range planning. we try to understand that DCD is one division, and so what we come up with is gets implemented, and what they implement needs to inform what we do. So we have a process to track that and kind of collaborate.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening, Planning Commission. I'm Heather Cleveland, Long Range Planner with Department of Community Development, and I'm here tonight to present to you the pre-approved ADU plan set project. So what is the problem that we're trying to solve? So some context on this project. So as Colin mentioned earlier, Kitsap County is experiencing a housing crisis. Housing is a priority in the comprehensive plan. Accessory dwelling units are one tool to help address the housing crisis, and pre-approved ADUs make ADUs more accessible to more people. So five jurisdictions have teamed up to work on this project. So it includes Kitsap County, along with the cities of Bremerton, Bainbridge Island, Port Orchard, and Poulsbo. And it was inspired by the cities of Lacey, Tumwater, and Olympia. And the facilitator in this is KRCC, Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council. And KRCC hired an architect to develop plan sets, and each participating jurisdiction will conduct reviews to pre-approve the plan sets. So that's a summary of the project that's happening. So there was a qualifications-based selection process. So it was an RFQ that was put out, and the architect that was selected was Artisans Group because they were qualified. And another thing that made them stand out is they already had four ADU plan sets that they had done for other cities and other jurisdictions. And so we're working to license those for Kitsap County and the other four cities. And so that allowed us to kind of start already ahead. And then in addition to that, it allowed us to use budget to have, in addition to those four, to have two more plan sets created, which I'll go into more details on that in a moment. So the project timeline looks like this. In fall of 2024, the architect was hired. In January through March, pre-review for the four plan sets, as I had mentioned, that have already been used in other jurisdictions, but we're looking to receive feedback from Kitsap County and the other jurisdictions before they were finalized. And the idea of that too is they were designing to the strictest standard of all five to ensure that we would have the same drawing set for all five jurisdictions. Spring of 2025, four plan sets to be released sometime in the spring, and two more plan sets will be in progress very soon. And then eventually promotion and process development for those. So how is this going to work? So currently, the four plans are submitted for building review with Kitsap County, and the other jurisdictions are doing the same. And then in summer, fall, the final two plans will be finalized and then also released and promoted. So how will it work? Building plan reviews are expedited. So the architectural review, structural review, and energy code review will already be done. That's what's being done right now. What's not expedited, it's still a process, is zoning requirements, critical areas, utility infrastructure, and other site-specific review. And this is what the process will look like. We are still working on this, but this is the idea. So a user learns about the plan sets through outreach and visits KRCC website or the jurisdiction's website. We're all working on our respective websites right now, but KRCC will direct everyone to the respective jurisdiction. The user will request the plan set for a specific site from the jurisdiction. The plan sets can only be used in Kitsap County. So I simply note that because the whole plan sets won't be available for anyone to download. They have to show that they'll be using them in Kitsap County. The user investigates critical areas and other site-specific issues. Just like any other building process, user prepares site plan, user applies for permits from jurisdiction, and jurisdiction conducts site-specific reviews. So another part of this is, well, what will the customer be saving? They'll be saving the cost of paying the architect and also that time for the building review process. A question that was important to us when we were looking, you know, into this project is, can the users make modifications and what will that look like? So there's built-in flexibility in the plan sets, so different roof types, siding, those types of things can be changed out without further review. You select those types of options when you're submitting it. The user can hire an architect to make modifications using the plan sets as a base. Those will no longer be pre-approved, but they will be ahead as far as getting an ADU plan set finished. And then non-structure modification will still be eligible for those expedited review process. So these are renderings of the four plant license plan sets that are currently in review. So we have a 400 square foot studio, a 600 square foot one bedroom, and then two 800 square foot. One is a one story and then one is a two story that has a smaller footprint. And like I mentioned earlier, you can see here too, the roof type, siding colors can all be modified, you know, if needed, especially to match the primary house. So the two new plan sets, these are the initial concepts. They're in progress right now. So there'll be a medium large carriage house ADU with a modular garage space option. So it'll be a 24 by 24 living space on top of a garage with an option to add that extra. And then a large 1,000 square foot ADU that can either be wide or narrow, depending on the layout of the site. So next steps, process. So how are customers and contractors access the pre-approved plans? So we're using internally the basic ADU plan, and it's the basics process. However, it's never been done this way, so we just have to model it after that, but make it a little bit different. So we're working on that right now to see how that will work. And it's been nice because there's other jurisdictions going through the same thing, so we're comparing notes. How are you all doing it? How are we doing it? And then we obviously will have to do it however works best for Kitsap County. And then also promotion will be a next step. So how will customers and contractors hear about the pre-approved plans? We'll be promoting it. It'll be on the websites. We're presenting to KBA in April. And then there's other opportunities for us to promote it. And then on the right here are two examples of websites that are already getting started. One is from Port Orchard and the other one is from Polsbo. And we will have a similar landing page so people can learn more about it. And I'm happy to answer any questions or comments.
Are you charging fees for these plans?
No fees for the plans.
Two quick questions. I assume, again, we're talking about zoning. So ADUs in rural will still be required to be subject to a CUP, a conditional use permit.
That's correct.
Okay. Second thing is, I saw that the sixth plan there was a 1,000 square foot unit. My recall is Kitsap County's limit on size is 900 square feet for an ADU.
In UGAs, it is allowed, but not in rural.
Oh, okay. So, I'm sorry. So, the 1,000 square foot would be for
UGAs.
Within the UGA.
Correct.
Okay.
Great. I checked that too.
Oh, super. Thank you so much.
Let's talk public participation. Have we got KBA involved in the design phase of this so we can get the builder's aspect to it?
Yes, they'll be a part of, we're presenting to them in the two new plan sets. They'll be presented the concept of it, and then we're going to welcome their feedback. The first four were already finished, but the second two, yes, and that presentation will be in April.
Yeah, I would just think that they would like to be involved.
I agree.
I'll just add that I find this to be highly innovative and very cool. So I think it opens up a lot of opportunities, and then I think it could provide co-benefits. We think about different areas where we need housing and just other ways that we can, serve that need. So thank you so much for the presentation.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Would there ever been any consideration by the county to consider very old, small homes that most people consider now to be not big enough size to be kind of retrofitted as an ADU, if they were to build another main house but be able to retain the old house to use as an ADU?
Not that I know of, but I'll ask.
Thank you.
Are there lot size requirements with ADUs, and where is that?
Yes, and they still have to meet those requirements, and I can follow up and share those with you.
Yeah.
And we do want to point that out for folks that although this is free, you still have to meet those requirements and try to make it as clear as possible.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, we will open the floor for general public comments in the afternoon. We have any from online?
We do.
Two.
First, Mr. Palmer.
I don't know if Colin is still there with the code edits, but one of the director's interpretations that should be a part of his code edits is the one that was issued in March of 2020 relative to minimum maximum density development in urban and urban cluster areas. That should have been a public hearing in the first place, but it did not. And I'm hoping that it's part of the edits that DCD will work on this time. Now, regarding the ADUs, at least in rural areas, you can do 60% of the, or size, 60% of the main dwelling on the property. I don't know how that comports with the requirements for urban areas, but strikes me that one of the options ought to be for 60% stuff, which we've had in the past. Second point on the ADUs is, at least in rural areas, and I haven't checked the urban areas, but there was a design requirement that the ADU bear some similarity to the main dwelling unit on the site. And that would seem to be a necessary code amendment if they're going to change it to one of the pre-approved designs. Regarding those pre-approved designs, if they have to be placed on a level lot, they're probably any one of the three or four options would work, but if they have to be sited on a property that's got a topographic relief of maybe 10 to 15%, that's likely to require some structural engineering. And is that part of the stuff that the county is going to approve or require when one of these pre-approved plans are to be cited on that lot? And I chose the 10 to 15% because that's below the threshold for a site that is going to be problematic with regard to special reports for developing on steep slopes. 10 to 15% wouldn't trigger a steep slope study by an engineer. So I'm just concerned about those kind of hang-ups because there's, yes, there is relatively level property in Kitsap, but there's a whole lot of property that's got steep slope conditions, even in urban areas. That's it for comments for now.
The ADUs, the pre-approved plans still have to meet all requirements. So this doesn't change that at all. So it, flat, matching, all those requirements are the same. So if it doesn't match, you can't choose this. However, we asked for there to be lots of options to hopefully that you can make it match. But those requirements still exist.
Marla Powers. Ms. Powers?
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, thank you. My name's Powers. I'm an environmental planner for the Port Gamble Squaw Tribe. And I had some comments about the code edits that Colin brought up today. And maybe it would be helpful for me to have a better understanding of what the proposed changes are. This is related to the Title 12 stormwater drainage and the director's interpretations. And that the tribe has continuously expressed concern about development in and impacts to critical areas and their buffers. This concern has been expressed in 3 points. The buffer reduction should be limited and not exceed a 25% buffer reduction. That the process of review for impacts to critical areas should include public notice and include a public hearing. And that decisions for any critical area buffer reductions should be made through the hearing examiner. And that this process will ensure that all code compliance requirements are met, including the stormwater issues that Colin and his team might be trying to achieve. But again, I'm not sure what those director interpretations are for. And then my final comment would be that the ADU pre-approved plans and that the Port Gamble Squaw Tribe fully supports the use of these ADU plans in the urban growth areas, but is opposed to any of this use in the rural areas. And I'll provide additional writing comments in the future to you to consider. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further comments from the board? Hearing done, we will close the general public comment period. That leaves for the good of the order. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, and thank you everyone for your comments this evening. I just wanted to uplift, and I'm in no way affiliated, but I just saw it on the internet, but Puget Sound Clean Air Agency is hosting a community workshop on reducing climate pollution in Kitsap tomorrow, which is Thursday, at the Bremerton Government Center. So that's the Norm Dix building in downtown Bremerton, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. So again, it's regarding the Washington Comprehensive Climate Action Plan, and they want to hear from the kind of local, regional jurisdictions. And so this event will be hosted in Kitsap tomorrow evening. So I just wanted everyone to know that, a little bit relevant to this group and for those who might be interested in listening in this evening. Thanks.
I was at a presentation that included Diane Fish, who is at the Conservation District. I'm a board supervisor of the district. The really excellent presentation made me think of the Planning Commission as we're doing the Year of the Rural. Diane is very knowledgeable with regards to farmland preservation, of which, let's see, Kitsap has lost, I think it was 61% of their farmland between 1997 and 2017, I believe, according to the USDA. So that's 60% of the farmland. in our county. And so I hope when we discuss agriculture in the coming months, if it would be possible for staff to give time. I'm not volunteering her, but I think she'd probably be open to giving her brief presentation, because it's very powerful, has images and real stories, real data with regards to how, you know, how critical these areas are, and how easily you might lose them without a really quick and thorough foresight by the Planning Commission and the county. So I'll go ahead and send an email along to staff with that. But so hopefully we'll get to see from her in the future. But so thank you for letting me talk about that.
Just a quick question on that. Is that available? Is her presentation available online, or is there slides that we could look at?
I will see if I can get that from Diane. I know that they put together a big document that they gave to the Department of Community Development, and it's called In Our Hands or something like that, I believe. It's a long document. It explains all that. So I'll get a copy of that to you, Richard. Yeah, and I'll send it out. Yeah.
Jewel, and she can
give it to Claire. Okay.
No further comments. I declare this meeting over. Thank you very much.